Every boy loves Beyonce. Every boy loves Beyonce. Yeah, okay. Every boy loves Beyonce. Yeah, every boy loves Beyonce. I just wanna wax her on and off like a sensei. No disrespect the hoe. I don't want no gunplay. Let me clean up my thoughts. Keep it moving just like a one-way. Hold up, Thicko Huey. His thoughts are irreplaceable. Chanel, he keep it real. You know that boy is flawless. B's your favorite artist, and that's without a doubt. Time for discussion. You know what we about. Every boy loves Beyonce.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Boys Love Beyonce. I am the one and only Bugaboo Hugh, aka I am Black Culture.
Love it. Yours is always they're always deep or like meaningful, and mine are just nasty lyrics that I felt 5 seconds before we hit record. It makes me feel angry and inadequate, but it's Bugaboo
Don't feel that way.
I feel that way always. It doesn't work. But I am Bugaboo Charnel, aka going out my head. I think I'm losing all my mind.
Oop, over who? Over what?
I don't know. It's just my favorite sexy Beyonce song. Like the yeses and speechless. Woo! Yeah! I'm like,
oh.
I wish I could hit those notes. Yeah!
I wish I could too.
Woo!
Come on now. And we have a returning guest, actually the only guest that we've had.
He's a resident.
Who we got? Yeah, the resident. The resident BHD.
Hey. Oh, man. Hey, everybody. I'm Bugaboo Kev. Yeah, Bugaboo Kev.
Yeah. AKA right. The resident BHD.
All right. I'll take
it. All right, we gonna rock with that one?
Fuck Kevin.
How you been, man?
I'm good. How are you? How are you guys?
Good. Blessed and highly favored and still a heathen.
I'm some of those things.
Also, it just hit me earlier that this is kind of like our anniversary episode, because like the first episode dropped Valentine's Day last year.
Really?
Yeah.
Has it been a year?
It has.
My God.
Exactly. We made
I've been
it.
Doing this too. This podcast shit too long, man. oh my.
So yeah, it makes Kev's presence even more special for me. It's like when you show up to somebody's house and it's like, oh, you having a party? We didn't even know.
Well, thank you for coming back, Kevin.
Of course. I told you guys, I'm here whenever.
And we're here whenever. The door's always open.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it is.
And you've been busy, but we're going to get into that shortly. But I want to go ahead and jump into the schooling life, if that's cool with y'all.
Hey. Mm-hmm.
If y'all ready. All right. Cool. So on Sunday, the Grammys happened, where people in Blue Ivy's music industry, you know, celebrate music. And, you know, they flipped the coin this year. I think the coin landed on obscurity and not popularity for the most part. Mm. So that's what the voting was based on, I think. I'm not sure. But seeing as how the Grammys is pretty much, it's something that everybody, a lot of artists aspire to win one. But it's, at the end of the day, it's a voting thing. It's kind of like a popularity contest. And we see a lot of people like striving to win Grammys and, you know, sometimes getting upset that they don't win one. People winning Grammys that may not deserve it by other standards. And it's just a big kind of like a popularity thing. And seeing as how we're all, you know, in creative lanes, and a lot of what we do and how we move forward depends on public perception and people liking our things. I thought it would be kind of cool to talk about how we handle navigating that space where it's like, I want people to like my thing so I can do more. So first question is just that, when you feel like your work isn't getting the attention that it deserves, or the attention that you're getting doesn't match the energy that you put into it, how do you navigate that?
Look. Cap, you can go first. You're the guest.
Oh, man. I don't... This is heavy. I don't know.
Pick it up. It don't gotta be.
Ain't
heavy.
You been lifting? You should be.
Oh, I try, but
Or okay. Well, rather, do you guys ever feel that way? Started that way. I don't want to assume.
Oh yeah, no. yeah. It's like, well, nothing is ever gonna be everything to everyone. So you know. Right. You got to start from that place, I guess, and have a lot of confidence in your own, which for creative people is like the worst, but whatever. Like, we're creative people because we want others to validate us in some ways, but
right.
It's like, you know, you also have to have that kind of belief in yourself. Which is easy to say, but not easy to do.
Yes.
So, you know, I'm old and have been doing this, you know, teaching and doing other creative shit for years, and still don't know the answer to this question, but like trying to figure out, you know, or how to have enough confidence in yourself to just like stand there and say it and do it and be it. And I mean, I guess that's why we all love Beyonce, because she can do that.
Yes. Because she can sit in the audience and watch Adele take an award. And she can sit there and watch Beck win an award that was rightfully hers and just sit there and smile. Like, I mean, I broke the internet. Like, I dropped the hottest shit of the year. And I mean, it's fine that y'all can vote for them. I don't care. Like, I aspire to be at that level where I can watch other people just succeed. And this is like, damn, my stuff is just as good, if not better. Why aren't I getting the same attention? Why aren't I getting the same praise? Or is my shit just not that good? And I don't know if that's like my anxiety kicking in when I have that, or if it's like accurate assessment of reality, and it always fucks with me. But what about you, Charnel? How do you navigate that space? What's some things that go through your head, if anything at all?
Well, I've got really bad imposter syndrome always, all the time. People listening don't know what it is, I'm assuming that Huey and Kevin do too, but it's when you just don't believe you're good enough, and you're like, I shouldn't be doing this. I'm just waiting for someone to tell me that I'm a fraud so I can leave. Basically, but no, I have a really hard time with this, because I get a lot of, I don't want to call it praise, but I get a lot of insulated praise from people that I come to expect it from. So when it comes to people who don't know what I do or don't know about me, having to judge those things, I think it really puts my anxiety to 100. One of the things I stopped doing is reading what people feel about me. If I look through like my podcast reviews, and there are people who are like, this is amazing, you're incredible, I'm so glad people like you are doing this. And then you have the, this is horrible, they're never going to be like this. And those voices sound so loud all the time. And at the same time, I don't know, there's these other things that are telling you how great you are. But I'm also a humble enough person not to want to search for that acclaim or want people to praise me or high five me, because I think that's what keeps me grounded, is that I think God does it well. Like, as soon as you start feeling your own, you know, patting your pastry a little too much, God come and slap that pastry down. Like, wait a minute, bitch. This thing, like,
he grabbed that hand like Steve Harvey.
Right. So I think that's how I navigate it. I just trust that the people I love and the people that know me and appreciate what I do hold me accountable when I fall short. And I don't look for people who are already holding me at a deficit to judge my work. But when it comes to those strangers, I just hope that they, like, really it is hope that they just take an honest sample of what I put out there, not just something they clicked on because they thought it would be interesting, but something they're like, oh, well, let me give it 4 or 5 tries, or let me try to see what a broad scope of what they do is. Because I'm in a weird spot with it now, where I feel content to the point where if people don't like me, I'm just like, screw it. I like me. And I like what I do. And the minute I start doing things for other people, it no longer becomes fun. It becomes work. Right. And then I don't want to do it. So if they, if everyone likes it, though, cancel me. That's how I feel. It means I'm doing something wrong. So long-winded, but that's how I feel about it.
But I mean, that's what we got to talk about these things and get it out in the open. Because I'm pretty sure we're not the only ones that feel this way. There's nobody really likes to talk about it that often. I don't know. But I just think it's something to talk about and bounce ideas off and see how, you know, each other, how we all deal with it and what I can pick up from you guys. And I don't know if it's anything I can pick up from me. But, I mean, we here for each other. We got to support each other. So I just thought it would be dope to break the ice with that.
Yeah, all the ice.
All the ice. But on to other things, to bigger things. Somebody has a book coming out.
Who's that? Who's that?
What? Who's that? It's the one and only Bugaboo Calf, the resident BHD.
Yeah.
Booklets?
Yeah.
Books.
A reading.
The book that I was expecting to be called Politicizing Beyonce.
Yeah, the book's coming out. Finally. I feel like I've been talking about the book coming out for, geez, I don't know, years.
But I mean, you've been working on it though. So
yeah,
I mean,
I've been working on it, and now it's finally coming out.
Ain't I a Diva? Beyonce and the Power of Pop Culture Pedagogy. Yes. That's a long title.
Yeah, it is. But you know, these academic folks love a little, they love a long title. So,
yes, me. I am Mariah, the elusive Santos.
Yes. Actually, that's a very good example. I am in that category now with Mariah. It's coming out June 11th.
June 11th. Finally. So what was the thought process behind the title?
The title came from, well, the first part comes from me kind of mashing up Beyonce with Sojourner Truth, Anti-Woman, you know, the famous old black feminist speech, that she gave. But actually, so if you read the book or if you research other stuff, she didn't actually give that speech. It was recounted that way. And so we don't actually have any historical record of her giving the speech with that title, Ain't I a Woman? But it's kind of become a rallying cry now. So me mashing that up with Beyonce's Diva, and that's the first chapter of the book where I talk about like putting Beyonce up, which is what the whole book does, putting Beyonce up against black feminist theorists, heroes, speakers, artists, whatever, and creating conversations between the two, like mashing them up against each other. And then, you know, the second part of the title is obviously about Beyonce. I've been teaching this class about Beyonce since 2010, and there's stories about my own teaching strategy, stories from the classroom, stories about what I think is the right way to like approach education today. And so that was kind of the second part, Beyonce and the Power of Pop Culture Pedagogy, why pop culture should be so, and why Beyonce especially should be so central to people's pedagogy today to get young people interested in learning.
So was the Sojourner Truth tie-in, was that something that just came to you, or was that something that you just sat down and you thought about and had some throwaway titles and you just landed on that one and stuck with it?
That one kind of jumped out at me to begin with. I mean, there's always, so I'm always kind of switching things up with like what I assign next to what Beyonce song. So the readings kind of switch around, but there was always this play around the Sojourner Truth readings and who she was, not just that speech, because it's important, even though it may never have happened in those words. It's still important as a historical text, but also like learning about Sojourner Truth as a person and reading her own narrative and things like that. And anti-woman, like, I just was imagining what would the new version of that be? Like, if Sojourner Truth were here and was giving that speech or saying that same thing, what would that be? And like, Beyonce's diva just kept getting put right in the center. And I was like, you know, what Beyonce's saying about what is a diva, who is a diva, is kind of what Sojourner Truth was saying about who is a woman, what is a woman back then in terms of a Black woman, intersectional categories. So the whole first chapter is about putting those two together and thinking about what a woman means, what it's meant through history, and how the category of woman has excluded Black women for a lot of time, or maybe still excluded, you know. And so what does all of that mean? So anti-diva just kind of came to me as this perfect combination of the two.
Number one, come through with this Black history.
Yeah, yes.
For y'all, those of y'all who didn't go to school.
This is for people who went to school. Yeah, waxing crescent.
But no, this is great. So how long did it take you, just from conception to finishing? How long did it take you in total to finish the book?
Oh man, just the book?
Just the book.
So I've been teaching it since 2010. I started writing the book in 2014. And like my last draft of the book was just turned in right before the year was over, so end of 2018. But that also takes into account that I had a book, like I was done with the book, and then Beyonce put out Lemonade, so I had to like redo everything. And that's been my whole thing since I've turned in the final version of the book, which can't be changed now, no matter what. Even if Beyonce puts out a new album, I can't really change anything. But I was like, Beyonce, just please, just wait until June at least, and then you know
she can wait longer than that because I ain't got no money,
right? Well and Lion King's coming out, so I feel like we're in a safe space right now where she,
I hope, unless we're not, Jesus, I hope. Oh no, she's lulling us like a lion into a false sense of security.
Yeah, nobody knows. We never know. That's the thing with Beyonce since 2013. Her we mind. Never know. So yeah, so I was just like, give me a space of time where I can write everything up, get it out, get it published, because putting out the book takes time. Just give me a moment and then like do whatever you need to do, because then I'll just write like an extra chapter every time. We can do a reissue of the book. It's fine.
Listen, there's nothing wrong with an electronic addendum.
Right. Or an article or whatever I can do. But I just want to get it out.
A PDF file.
Yeah. I just want like to get it out there before she kind of does anything else major.
You got any questions, Sharna?
Yeah, I mean, my question is more not so much Beyonce based, because we know that Beyonce is an inspiration, a motivator, and an aspirator, if that could be a word. my question is, how did you find the audacity, the confidence to write about Beyonce, and to not only to do that, but to be bold enough to put it out? Because we kind of talked about this in school and life. But I think everyone has, millions of people have written think pieces on Beyonce. There's been tons of books about Beyonce, but I don't think I've seen a book about Beyonce or centering Beyonce in this context. So you being a white dude, just kind of like not really fitting the idea of what people think Beyonce's fans look like, or what people who uplift and celebrate Beyonce look like. Where did you like find that?
Or Black women in general.
Really. You're the man, burn him. But I think that, not you, not literally, but like, where did you, like, where was the time and space, the catalyst that was like, okay, I can do this and do it from a place of dignity and respect and admiration, without fear of like actual retribution? Cause I see you get down on Twitter and I'm like, Kevin might be trying to stir something up, or maybe it's like,
well, I still don't have the audacity or confidence to do this. So like, we'll see what happens. But, I started teaching the class, like I said, in 2010. And so at that point, it was not new. Like, it was before the major Beyonce things that happened, like the self-titled surprise drop and Lemonade and all these things. So I was just kind of like, how can I get students to learn and think about race, gender, sexuality? Okay, I'm gonna use Beyonce because I love Beyonce's music and whatever. So it wasn't such a big
start with what you know.
Well, it wasn't such a like touchstone of culture at that point. Like, I might have anticipated like Beyonce is gonna be something major, but it hadn't happened yet. And right. And so,
because that was around what, like, I Am Sasha Fierce?
Yeah, I Am Sasha Fierce had just came out. Yeah. 4 hadn't come out yet. So the first time I taught the class, I was just using B-Day and I Am Sasha Fierce and some other like old Destiny's Child tracks and stuff from the first album. The major like arc of the class starts with B-Day, because I think that's like a major turning point for her. But so I didn't use the entire Dangerously in Love, but we used some stuff. And then I also brought in songs from other, because at that point we didn't have a ton of material, just 2 albums. So
right,
I brought in songs from other Black women artists. And my point was always to use all Black women's writing to assign next to Beyonce. So I was just like, I just want these students to learn about this and to read Black women's writing and to, you know, have this as maybe a jumping off point to learn whatever they want to go off and learn. So, and then it kind of evolved and took off, especially as Beyonce made major, like, world shattering, world stopping,
and carrying on.
Yeah, like, and she carrying did. On.
Kind of carrying on.
Yes.
So I still am like always constantly trying to negotiate who I am and what I'm doing and what my place in doing this is, because other classes have popped up since then, by Black women, by other people too, but I still think there's a place for anyone and everyone to kind of, because Beyonce is across the board, like, she speaks to people across everything, across, right? Obviously, if you're a Black woman, you're going to have a certain affinity and relationship with Beyonce's music. If you're a Black queer person, you'll have an affinity and relationship with her music that's different than me. Like, I'm a white guy, I'm queer, so like, I have certain affinities and like certain connections, but that's what I love about her, because everyone kind of comes together around Beyonce. And so that's where I try and situate myself, like, as someone not who's an expert on anything or telling you how to feel about anything, but just like someone who's trying to facilitate a conversation about all of these important things in the world using Beyonce's music, because we all know it. Even if I've had a couple students that don't actually like Beyonce's music, which is like, I don't understand that, but
fail
they
them.
Don't get a
electric chair,
right? They don't get right. a bad grade off the bat. Like, they still have to prove their case, but people have come to class being like, well, I don't get why you're you know, I don't like this and I don't like that. But they still have to prove a case about, you know, build with evidence and sources and tell me why you disagree with Beyonce's use of sexuality in Partition or whatever. And it's just a way to kind of have all these conversations. So that's how I see myself. And I'm constantly questioning myself still every day, even though the book's coming out. And I'm like, what will happen when the book comes out? I don't know. We'll see.
But I mean, it's not too much different than what you've already been doing.
Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, at least in my mind, and you know, I'm always, oh, it's always going to be peace and rainbows and glitter and shit. So in my mind, it I wouldn't think or imagine it being any different than now. And personally, I respect the way you go about doing what you do. I feel like you understand where things apply to you and where it's like, okay, this is outside of my experience. Mm-hmm. And you have respect for those boundaries, at least from what I've seen on Twitter and heard from you on Learned and from the last show that we did. I feel like you know where the boundaries are and you respect that and you navigate it very well. And you're one of my faves.
I try to. I mean, I never say that I'm anything that I'm not. Like, I'm a white guy. Right. Clearly, I'm not trying to be anything but a white guy. And that gives me limitations on some things. But also, I have like, you know, classrooms full of students that are from all different backgrounds. So they fill things in when I don't have the answer and I don't have the experience. The students fill things in. And so it becomes just a conversation rather. It's not me lecturing at anyone, for sure.
Right.
I guess when you read a book, it can feel like someone lecturing, but I hope that I've written it in a way, because I also talk about myself and who I am and throughout the book. So I hope that I've also situated the book in a way that is very clear and people will be able to take a lot from it, but also add to it. Like, it's not like supposed to end a conversation. It's supposed to start a conversation.
Right. And for me, from the excerpt that was on Amazon about Lemonade and everything, I felt like that, I mean, it was fine to me. But again, you know, peace, rainbows, and glitter and shit. So,
yeah. We'll see.
So, what was the hardest part during writing? Like, was there more where it's like, you know, fuck this, I don't want to do this anymore, I'm gonna go get a 9-to-5?
Yeah, like every moment. No. it was writing to me is just very it's hard because when I'm in a classroom teaching and like when I'm standing there, nothing is forever. Like, we're having a conversation, but it's not written down. It's not. The hardest part is creating a version of it that is going to be the version that everyone else will see. So, like, deciding exactly the one way that it will be said without, obviously I can speak on it and like change, like go off and add things and whatever, but like creating that one version of the analysis or the narrative that everyone's gonna see and not see me like kind of going back and forth about things, that was really hard. So yeah, it was just like a lot of weight over words and should I choose this word, should I do that, should I write this sentence that way. It was like aggravating, but that's just writing. It's not I'm sure anyone who writes a book or writes anything kind of feels that way. It's like solidifying it in one version is kind of agonizing.
But what was your go-to whiskey?
Ooh, You know, I really like this whiskey called Medley Brothers. I don't know if anyone knows it, but it's a little bit higher proof than most whiskey, than like most well whiskeys or whatever. But it's I don't know. It
I don't even drink no more when I'm insulted.
Well, the my local bar, which I go to, they have it on special, so I feel like it's not a well whiskey, but it's above that, but they still have it on special, so it's not as great as the it's a middle ground whiskey.
We like those.
Yeah, I go for that. I mean, whatever. I'll drink whatever whiskey because I'm a whiskey person. So,
what helped get you through the book? The most.
Get through the book the most. Just
like what whiskey?
Oh, whiskey. Well, that Medley Brothers helped. yeah, that whiskey helps. There's a fine line between having a whiskey and like kind of letting go of your anxieties about writing and having too much whiskey and then not being able to write anymore. So, you know, it's a fine balance.
Lauren.
What you got, Shonda?
I was letting y'all have your whiskey talks and stuff. I would have hopped in it too. No. I fancy myself something of a writer, more of a, again, insulation is important to me. So I don't put a lot of things out. I have a Tumblr that if people find it, they can find it. I haven't posted anything on it since like 2015. You know, like most, you know, deprecating gays or people who think they're way too deep for the world have a Tumblr page that they secretly write on. And that was me for a little bit. So like I was going to ask about writing and then Huey asked about writing. So I was like, oh, I don't really have to say anything. I guess I can ask this question because.
Yeah, ask your question.
Oh, no, let me do my thing. But so like you and I write two different things. Like I write a lot of kind of short stories or essays about life, what I felt about a certain like instance. But the majority of my writing has been this weird sci-fi book I've been working on like the last year and a half. And my question pretty much, well, let's talk logistics, I guess, is once you start putting something together, at what point do you start sharing it with people who could move or shake things? Not just with your friends, but with people like this could actually be something. Like at what point do you feel like is the right time in the course of writing? Is it a few chapters you're like, wow, this might come together when it's mostly done?
I mean, I think it's kind of individual, like depending on how you feel. I still, even though, like, I'm in a weird space because I was teaching some of the stuff and speaking about some of the stuff, even though I wasn't sharing the written versions of it. And so some of it was out there, and that was something to talk about with editors or whoever. I would say it's never too early to share things, because writing by nature changes, like you edit and you change, and I also get that the impulse is to never share until something's perfect. But I think there's also a lot of value in seeing the work and seeing it, like, as if you're a fan of the work, like watching it change over time, or if you're an editor, or if you're someone trying to sign a book or agent or whatever. I don't know all the logistics of the business side of writing still, even though I have a book. I mean, I still don't understand all of that. That it's still never, like, you can't really show anything that's going to be bad, because it can always become better. And I think to create an audience around it, it's helpful to share pieces as you go, even if you don't want to share big pieces, like little snippets or whatever, because that creates the audience and desire for the full book or whatever like that.
I mean, that was kind of my thought process. I was like, I've never written a book before, and I've never had to write a book. So I was like, I've shared like a chapter, like a prologue with a friend. They're like, this is good. And I was like, insulation. Mm-hmm. I feel like you want to say that because you like me, not because you like it. So like, I don't want to have all this, again, be in this silo or this echo chamber and shoot something off, and which it happens so often, but someone's just like, no, this is trash, you can keep it, and moves on. So I just didn't know like where there's a confidence boost that picks up after you've written something. If it's been 2 years, and you're like, you know what? Blood, sweat, and tears, this is worth something, damn it. And you move from there. It's just like, take a little bit of pieces. But I appreciate your
I mean, I don't mean to burst any bubbles, but like, I still feel the same way, like, about anyone who says anything nice is going to just be like, oh yeah, well, that's because I know you and whatever. Like, you still not. So it never goes away. You just have to do it anyway, I guess.
Ooh, I'm going to get that tatted on my body somewhere.
Do it anyway, yeah.
Yeah, do it anyway. Ooh, get it as a tramp stamp.
No, because I will never see it. I've got four tattoos on my body, and all of them are visible from the front. And that's all I need. Oh, man. I don't want anything that I can't look at myself. I get tattoos for me. You know, not for people to think I look
edgy. I mean, you're going to know it's there.
I mean, I know it. I met a guy the other day who had this amazing back piece. Like, don't ask how I saw it. It was this whole, oh, you got new tattoos, so do I. And he like lifts up his shirt, and I was like, oh, you have nice abs. But also, you've got this these colors on your back. And I was like, why do you get that if you can never see this? He's like, oh, I just, it's just cool knowing I have it. It costs you $450. It's cool knowing you have it. Like, I don't understand those people. Like, that could have been rent, that could have been a car payment. That could have been a trip to Miami, but you decide to put it something where you'll never see it again unless you're in a mirror or unless someone takes a picture of it for you. It just doesn't make sense to me. It will never be me. Wow. Long-winded, but so
drag me.
I'm just saying, you get a tramp
because
stamp.
Because I want the, I'm not a tramp stamp. I want the chakras down my spine.
Oh, that's cool though.
I'm probably going to cry if I do that because I know it's going to hurt like hell.
probably, but you got it. Ball out.
And I don't have anything.
You got the pain threshold? Ball out, bro.
I have a decent tolerance for pain. But for the book, the introduction was written by Cheryl Clark. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't know who that is. So I looked her up. Mm. But for those like me who didn't know who she was, can you say a little about who she is? A little bit about who she is and how that happened.
Yeah, Cheryl.
And what it meant for you to have her be a part.
Well, it meant everything, first of all. Cheryl Clark is this awesome, awesome black feminist poet, lesbian, black feminist lesbian poet. You know, she started writing and publishing in the 70s and 80s. She wrote some, you know, she had a piece in a really famous feminist anthology, This Bridge Called My Back, if people know that. She wrote her essay in that was called Lesbianism, an Act of Resistance. She's done a lot of work in poetry and essay writing. Since then, she taught at Rutgers. That's how I know her, from Rutgers. When I was there as a PhD student, she was teaching in the Women's and Gender Studies department. She also ran their LGBT, it went through a bunch of different names, but their LGBT student organization. And she's big in the black arts movement and all of that kind of stuff. So she's like a major figure. She knew all the big, you know, names that people talk about. Audre Lorde, Maya Angelou, Alice Walker. She knew all of them. She was in the mix with all of them. And so she agreed to write the introduction to the book, which was beyond my wildest dreams. They're like, who do you think you would like to write the introduction? And I named her. I was like, well, this is probably a huge, you know, this is never going to happen, but I would love Cheryl Clark as my first choice. And then I went through a number of people and the publisher wrote back to me and they were like, oh, Cheryl said yes. And I was like, ah, okay. So it meant a lot to me to be kind of validated in that way. And also to have, I have Cheryl writing the introduction, who's like an old school black feminist voice. And I have the illustration on the cover is done by a young Afro-Latina artist, Emerald Pellet, who does, her company is called Girl Trouble, GRLTRBL, without the vowels. She does like pins, feminist pins and intersectional feminist t-shirts and bags and pins and stuff like that. And so it was really cool to have like the old school and new school black feminist voices, visions, whatever, represented all there together. Since that's what the book is about too. And so that was really important to me. Yeah.
That's dope. And I told you this on the webs, but I'll say it again, you know, if you need a chapter for the audiobook read, my voice is available.
Yeah.
I can record it at home and send it to you. You know, it can be very simple. Okay. I'll volunteer Charnel for a chapter as well.
Okay.
I'm sure he'll be willing.
I mean, I'll be willing. I'm just letting you know I'm into it. I mean, I would much rather have the whiskey and talk shit while you write. I could do both. Totally do both.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that. But anything else on your mind, Charnel, about the book?
Oh, about the book? Oh, no. But if it was, it's like on my mind. Oh, so
what's on your mind?
Oh, just taking up space in your head. No, I'm just really excited to read it. I think that it's awesome. And I had a very small but working knowledge of who Cheryl Clark was. I knew of my anthropology class my freshman year of college. And that might be, I'm not dating myself. I'm probably not that old compared to everybody else talking, but my anthropology professor, I didn't know anthropology was a study of people. I thought it was just a study of like bones and things of that sort or whatever. But so that's how I met. I knew who Cheryl Clark was because he forced us to read these books about intersectionality. It's the first time I heard the word. Because he's this weird mixed race dude with dreadlocks and wore like tashikis and talked like a jazz musician. He was such a weirdo, but so good at his job. And that's how I discovered, I knew about the book, This Bridge Called My Back. And because it was one of our books in the class that we had, we were forced to read. He used to photocopy them and hand them out to us, the essays and things. So I was like, oh, I know this woman. But again, it's very small. It's 2007. But I think that's awesome. I'm really excited to see what this book does and what you do. And I would be more than happy to write the foreword or whatever the next book that comes out. You don't have to beg me. I'll do it for you. No, I'm excited, Kevin. I think that you have a great mind. And I think you come from a place, again, of respect and dignity and understanding. And I think that's really precious. And I think it's admirable and valuable. So exciting.
Thank you.
And really quick, tell them where they can pre-order the book and
yes.
All that stuff.
Yeah, you can pre-order it at anywhere books are sold. Amazon, The Feminist Press is the publisher. They're putting it out, so you can get it from their website or, you know, all the major places, Barnes & Noble, indie, whatever. What requested at your local bookstore and your library and blah, 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 whatever.
Cool. To switch gears a little bit. So, I mean, you had a whole course called Politicizing Beyonce. It's been several courses after that, you know, following in your footsteps. You know, we've had like religious services, you know, centering Beyonce. And then, I mean, the music industry belongs to Blue Ivy. So Beyonce pretty much is the standard. And I don't want to say in music, but in pop culture in general, Beyonce is a standard, if not the standard. Would you guys agree with that?
I would.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So we're all on the same page. I love this. I love cohesion.
Yes.
To you guys, when do you think that happened? When do you feel like that defining moment where she crossed that threshold into becoming a standard was? To me, I would put it at the release of self-titled.
I would say there was a magic to Beyonce that we started to feel a little bit more, I think, to her performances and things around 4. There was something about how she stood on, like, I don't know, there's like, you know, we knew why, because Blue Ivy was in there baking. Like, we knew why she was she was feeling the way she was. There was just an energy to her that she had never had, and a glow to her that she never had. And I felt that the way she approached 4 was this very, this is what I'm doing. And it's very cliche for an artist to say things like, well, I'm gonna finally make the album I want to make, and I don't care what people feel. I feel like that's been Beyonce forever, but this time she was like, this is something that's so personal to me that I made because I wanted to, and I don't give a damn if y'all buy it. I don't fuck all these promo tours and shit like that. I'm going on Good Morning America. I'm going to dance in rainbow colored shirts. We're going to go away from here. And so it was between that, like Good Morning America, big hair, to the drop of self-titled that nobody was expecting, where I think people just wanted to be Beyonce or follow her business plan or have her publicist. And I just feel like we saw it coming before it happened. It wasn't like a, you know, it wasn't like a, just a drop in our spirit, but I think it was just, it was those 2 years that really like kind of pushed her head up and shoulders above everybody else.
What say you?
I,
Mr.
BHD.
BHD.
I'm going to go back even further and say it's B-Day. Because to me, and I mean, that's like the whole center of like why I did the class or what I did the class around. I think B-Day is when she started first self-titled. Yes. Like that shook the world in a way that nothing else had. But the seeds were kind of planted in B-Day because that's when she, you know, the label hadn't supported her in Dangerously in Love like she wanted. They didn't think they were going to get...
And we could tell by the Wembley budget.
Yeah, they didn't think they were going to get the hits. She's like, oh, you know, she does that moment in the reenactment that she does all the time. Like, they didn't have one hit, number one hit. They had... yeah. So I think she got disillusioned in that moment, and she... Then she went and did Dreamgirls, and she was like, played this Dina Jones. She was not the strong character in it, that even though she kind of rewrote the end of Dreamgirls that wasn't part of the Broadway show, she's like, we'll just make it a little more empowering. But still, it wasn't as empowering. And then she comes back and she's like, okay, I'm just going to go away. I don't give a shit about the label. I'm going to go make the album. I'm going to do this. I'm going to hand it to them, and they're going to deal. Like, that to me was the moment she started to become Beyonce, like Beyonce. And ever since that moment, it doesn't matter what you do, what the label wants, what's going to be a number one, what's going to be whatever. She's just like, this is the music I want to make. So for me, it started with B-Day, I think.
Interesting. And the thing, like, for me, starting wise, Because I feel like her Beyonce been on your mouth since The Writing's on the Wall, at least. That I mean, Beyonce was a thing. Her name was, although it was mostly like in relation to her and her role in Destiny's Child, or her perceived role in Destiny's Child, like her name has been on people's mouths since then. I feel like B-Day and Beyonce experience was when the plant broke the surface of the earth. Mm-hmm. And she was like, I'm here. I'm about to fuck it up. Get ready. But I would say the seeds were planted in the Destiny Child days just because I feel like she did, it was so much work and preparation and training and skill building. And like I feel like she trained to dominate without the intention of dominating. Mm-hmm. This is a perception. I don't know. I'd be wrong sometimes. But
no, I think she's like been on a constant climb since it all started. And we still haven't seen the top of it. The top.
And that's what scares me.
Yeah.
And it's like we don't have but we don't have much, I'll say that, to be on the safe side. We don't have much to say to compare it to, because I don't think we've ever had anybody reaching these heights to even know what to expect to come next. Yeah. So it's like, what's coming? what else can possibly happen?
We don't know. I feel like we've said the same thing every time she's put something out where we're like, oh, there's no way Beyonce is topping this, and then punches us in the face. Like, even when we were thinking, like, oh, Lemonade is this amazing piece of art, and I don't know how Beyonce does this, what else is she going to do? And she doesn't just put it in audio form. She's like, bitch, give me 2 years to hit a stage again. And right. Gives us Beachella, which is this amazing, like, so I just feel like Beyonce is, I agree with everything you guys are saying, that one, Beyonce has absolutely no peers. She has contemporaries, but no peers. Like, people are doing it at the same time she's doing it, but no one's ever going to reach her. I have the monsters on Twitter telling me that Lady Gaga's nipping at Beyonce. No, she's not. We all saw
nipping at her what?
We all saw Joanne. We know she's not. But what I will say is that Beyonce, I think, surprises herself. I think Beyonce goes back and sits and opens that laptop and clicks open files from 2007, and she's like, oh shit, I didn't use that yet? But, or something else from like 97, like brings out a floppy disk, blows on a little bit, puts it in her. She's like, holy shit, I totally forgot me and Kelly were working on that. Well, she probably forgot about it. Like, I just feel like she's like constantly pulling from what she knows, what she's done, what the greats before her has done, and the things that people have yet to do and try because they're afraid to. But Beyonce has the clout and the name and the power and the star power to try new things, and fuck it if people say she fails, because she won't. So I just feel like there's all those things rolled into one, and Beyonce's never going to stop. Beyonce's not going to stop until it's time for her to go on home to heaven. I feel like that's when she's going to stop surprising us and outdoing herself, because she just built for it.
And then...
praise God.
Even then, she might come back and do something.
If she come back from the dead, I'm done. I was like, your faith has never...
Surprise, bitch. I bet you thought she was all the last of me.
Y'all bitches was at the damn Astrodome mourning and shit. Beyonce comes down from the ceiling like, oh, y'all thought it was finished. 1, 2, 3, 4.
We ain't done.
We ain't.
So when it comes to other artists, do you guys feel like Beyonce's name is brought up and thrown into the conversation too many times, or very inappropriately? Like, okay, example, with the whole Aaliyah situation and how people always want to say, well, if Aaliyah was still here, there wouldn't be no Beyonce and all that. Do you feel like Beyonce, it's like, do you feel like her name is brought up too much? And do you feel like it's being brought up too much by the people that like her or the people that don't like her?
No, but both are bringing it up. Like, it's not brought up too much, but both people that like her and the people that don't like her are bringing it up. The Aaliyah thing is stupid, I think, because and people have gone around with this before, but Aaliyah was Aaliyah. She was never anywhere near Beyonce or what we know of Beyonce now. I guess at the time they were a little bit closer. And maybe Aaliyah would have become something bigger, but it wouldn't have been what Beyonce is now. But she's the stand, like, you can't not bring up the standard. There has to be something that you're judging everything against, and that is Beyonce today, without a doubt. There's no, you know, in the 80s or the 90s, it would have been Janet Jackson. I guess you can, but there is always that kind of like person who's pushing things further, and that's right. Beyonce. There's no doubt. to me.
To all of us. Yeah. I wholeheartedly agree with that. There's no way in the world that Aaliyah would have been. Aaliyah was great for what she was. She had a lane and she was in it. Yeah. But I just don't believe she would have hindered Beyonce's rise to fame or stardom in any way, shape, or form, unless she cut Beyonce's legs off. But even then, Beyonce might learn how to walk on her hands and cut everybody else down.
Well, the vocals would alone. Have been. Even if Beyonce had no legs, she would still be able to sing.
If she was a parking barker like a Mariah Carey, you know, Beyonce would still blow the wigs off these hoes. I 100% believe that. And I agree with Kevin. Is this that everyone, when you have a standard, everyone has to be held to it. And everybody wants to be the person who now, you know, goes beyond the standard. Everybody wants to be the exception and not the rule. And everyone who is fans of Ariana Grande, or again, Gaga, or Rihanna, bless her soul, people who think that like, it's going to be my fave. It's not. It's just not. Like, I think when I think about it, like, there's...
It's not realistic.
Yeah, it's not. So, because I want to be compared to Beyonce. Like, compared to Beyonce, how successful and productive was my day? I ain't do a damn thing. I failed. You know, if I can get a quarter of the way of what Beyonce could get done when she's on her ish, then that's what I want. You know, but these girls out here who can barely hold a note, these Taylor Swifts who are barely being propped up specifically because of mediocrity and how it's celebrated in less melanated crowds, it's just amazing to me. Like, you're never going to be it. You're not built that way. You're not that kind of girl. And the fans know it. People just want to see Beyonce fail. And she won't, again, until she croaks. But even then, she'll probably come back. So stand-em. I'm sorry. But she just it. She really is it. And it's amazing to have a fave that is the it girl forever and always.
Right.
Beyonce's going to bring crowds, numbers, likes.
Talent.
Retweets, talent, vocals. She's just... Skill. She shows up and shows out every time. There are times where I feel that Beyonce, yes, can be, can oversaturate social media and things like that by just being Beyonce, overexposed. But Beyonce has never been overrated. She's been exactly what she said she is and what everyone else says she is.
And so that's not her fault when she... No, like, that's like everyone else's fault. If you overexpose her on social media... That's everyone complaining that they're not Beyonce. That's not just like celebrating Beyonce. I don't know. It's just she can't. She's a different level of artist than we have right now.
Yeah. And the reason I asked if you feel like her name is brought up too often is because a lot of the times you hear people saying, well, I don't like Beyonce because it's too much hype and I'm tired of hearing her name and that's all y'all talk about. Can y'all talk about something else? I don't like Beyonce because that's all. Like, that's what I hear a lot. And I'm like, it doesn't make sense that, like, that's not a valid reason for you to not like her or to not be able to acknowledge her talent and her skill and her presence. That has never really made sense to me. And it's like, you can log off, you know what I mean? You don't have to be on Twitter, and you're contributing to people talking about her name by talking about how you don't like her because people keep bringing her up. Like, you're part of the problem. Mm-hmm. Like, I need you to realize that. So that's why I asked that question. Do you feel like it's fair to other artists to compare them to Beyonce, or to have to expect them to sing as great as she does? Given the fact that I feel like Beyonce is a once in a lifetime, or maybe even a once in an eternity entity. And sometimes, to me at least, it just kind of feels unfair to be like, well, Beyonce would do things differently. Well, Beyonce is not a typical human being. So it kind of feels weird. But how do you guys feel about that?
I would say that, I mean, if I was an artist in this climate, like, I would want to compete with the best. And so that would push me. I don't think it's unfair to say that she's what she is. Like, that's, I would like that, because it would push me to be better. It doesn't seem like it does push the other artists out today be better. But,
and that's why I asked it, because I don't. It's not taken right. as a thing. I think everybody just kind of like, well, I'll never be that.
So. Yeah, I feel like they're giving up, and or just the climate today is that you don't have to do that much to be famous. So they don't do that much, whereas Beyonce is an actual artist and thinks things through every which way and 300,000 times, and puts all of these levels into what she does, which is what an artist should do, whereas everyone else just wants to get off a quick pop hook and do whatever, you know, download, get 100,000 downloads and their check. But if I were competing in the world of art, and I would want to compete on that level, and it would make me want to do better, but it doesn't seem that that's the way the girls out today are.
I don't even know if the word compete is even accurate, because you can't. And I feel like if I were a singer, songwriter, actress, philanthropist, genius, if I was all those things trying to not match up, but at least keep pace with the lane, or getting behind Beyonce, she plows a space or a lane for me. I don't know. I would just be a student. I wouldn't even try to be Beyonce. I wouldn't try to copy her or emulate her in any kind of way. In performance, I would do what Beyonce did, and just sit back and watch the people who were experts at the craft, and take all the parts that I could see myself in, and do that. And I think artists today, it's a little unfair to do that, because, like Kevin said, everyone's lazy. It doesn't take much to be popular. It doesn't take much to make it anymore. I mean, Lil Pump is out here in a $5 million house with Dorito colored braids, you know, or dreads. And he repeats the Gucci same gang line. That's a
good person, right?
Yeah, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang. Like, that is double platinum. But Beyonce releases Lemonade, and bitches complain that they have to wait for Tidal, or have to get, you know what I'm saying? Like, Beyonce creates this masterpiece, and everyone's like, well, why can't it be on SoundCloud, where I can get everything else with little Warbird or whatever the hell is happening out there? I don't know. And I don't know. I just feel like if I were an artist today, I would just kind of like be in awe, being very much watch. I'd be an audience reaction to whenever Beyonce is performing. Like, when you watch celebrities at the VMAs, like, cup their mouths, like, oh my God, what is this? That's where I would want to be, but also have a notebook out and just kind of like learn, wait for Beyonce to go away when she releases something, takes that 2-year break, and then that's when I jump in. And then she comes back, I just fall back. Like, that's where I'd ebb and flow with B, to at least seem important. So I don't know.
And you mentioned Beyonce, and we kind of talked about this before. Beyonce studied the people who were, you know, who excelled in their craft and really made an impact. Outside of Beyonce, who else is there to for the girls coming up? Who else is there to study Because like Beyonce, we said Beyonce had Prince, Michael, Whitney. Like she had a pantheon to study from.
Britney?
I feel like there's nobody else to study from other than Beyonce.
I mean, there she has contemporaries, just not equals. So, I mean, I look at Lady Gaga. Lady Gaga is a phenomenally talented human being who works hard, works very hard, just not as hard as Beyonce. Yes.
She doesn't know how to, she doesn't know how to, well, I don't know. Maybe this Las Vegas show will, like, she's doing Las Vegas now, isn't she? Or
yeah, she is. Enigma. Yes.
I don't know. So maybe that show will show us something, but she doesn't, I don't know. Just judging from the Grammys the other day, like, what the fuck is she doing? What?
She was on something at the guy. I'm 100% sure. She was rolling. Singing, like,
yeah,
it wasn't. She did a David Bowie tribute a couple years ago, but then this was like so weird. Like if it was a David Bowie tribute, I would have gotten it. But this was so strange, singing that Shallow song. I don't know. Like it, she can't convey. She's got a lot of ideas, but she can't kind of convey them to the public in a way that makes any sense, I guess. I don't know.
As a vision.
Yeah.
Just doesn't know how to be the vehicle for said vision.
Yeah. I don't, because right. I don't understand what she's trying to do. But I do agree that she has a lot of ideas. But I don't know who else out there has.
She was my Hail Mary. I don't know who else. I think.
That's it. I mean, Janet Jackson is still going, but, you know, like, to me, the prior era to Beyonce was Janet Jackson was, you know, showing people how to perform and do what they need to do. And she's still going, but it's like Beyonce is taking that to another level. So there really isn't. Well, Janelle Monáe actually is very interesting as a performer and has a lot of ideas and she has a whole sci-fi story that she's created. So there are some people, and she's very much a student of Prince as well, but there's really no one on Beyonce's level of popularity and notoriety that is leading the conversation other than her.
So we live in an amazing time.
What a blessing. You live...
I know, right?
We lived it. I think about that all the time when I look at Beyonce, but we lived in a time with Whitney Houston and Aretha Franklin and Michael Jackson and Beyonce and Prince, like these once in a generation talents that just, man, blessed. Hashtag.
Yes, and I firmly stand behind my statement that if Beyonce is not the last big superstar that we have, she is. Like the second to last.
I don't see anybody else coming up behind her. I mean, I do. Ever. Like, I see in terms of like numbers and like breaking records, like I feel like Taylor Swift again, like mediocrity is being celebrated in certain circles. I see her doing a lot of big numbers for a long time because if you don't have to sing on key all the time, you can go well into her 50s, 60s. But I do believe
she doesn't have the visuals. Someone like Taylor Swift doesn't have the like stage. Show that Beyonce does,
but she doesn't have the need artistry. She's proven overall. That she doesn't need it, though. You know, that's the thing.
She has a nice pen, and that's it. She can carry it up.
And till 55, 60, Taylor Swift will keep doing it and selling out stadiums. And but I just believe that Beyonce is really, truly the last megastar we're ever gonna see. Like it's, she just feels like it. Everybody else is too saturated now. No, you can go anywhere to get what everyone else sounds like. Back in the day, we've talked about this, Hugh. If you wanted Michael Jackson sound, you had to go to Michael Jackson for it. If you wanted Aretha, you had to go to Aretha. If you wanted Diana, you had to go. If you want Beyonce, you have no choice but to go to Beyonce. But if you want Ariana Grande, if you want Shawn, well, maybe not. But if you want Shawn Mendes, or you want Halsey, or Haley Stein, whatever her name is, or someone like, you'll find a million of them. You want a Lil Pump?
Yeah.
There's 10,000 of them tomorrow. So
you can turn on the radio for them.
Right.
And I don't feel like you can, I mean, you can turn on the radio for Beyonce, but Beyonce hasn't given us like radio friendly since I Am Sasha Fierce to me.
I mean, I'd say 4. I would say.
I don't feel like 4 was radio friendly.
I think so.
Best thing I never had was radio.
Yeah, best thing I never had and Love on Top were both, I think, radio friendly. The rest of them, though, Run the World should have burned. That's how I feel. Should never saw a radio play, but it did. So, but I think Love on Top and Best Thing I Never Had were like good radio singles. Like Love on Top was the lead single. I feel like it could have done some numbers, but. I'm not her team. Beyonce knows best.
A method to her madness, I guess. But this has been great. Any last thoughts though? Any final commentaries?
No, Kevin Doubt. No.
Ooh, he wore us out too. But Kev, can you tell everybody where they can find you? Oh, do you have a quick book of beef for us, Minister Charnel?
You know what? I was going to make it like, because we were recording this on Valentine's Day, I was going to make it love related, but I don't even know where, like, I don't even think I have a good one anymore. I was like, bow down. I feel like that's where we are. Just after this whole hour and 10 minutes of Beyonce praise and worship, I just feel like that's it. Like, no.
And it was actually intellectual conversation.
It was. Yeah, just, I feel like just know who the best is, acknowledge it, and go from there. Don't try to bring, you're not going to be able to bring down, you know, Beyonce ever. That Beyonce reign won't ever let up. it just won't. And you have to deal. Be subservient, like your faves. That's it.
Kev, can you tell them where they can find you out and again let them know where they can find the book and when to expect it if they don't want to pre-order, which you guys should do.
Yeah pre-order the book, that helps me a lot. You can get it on Amazon and all the other book wherever you buy books. You can look at me or find me on Twitter at Kevin Allred, and my website is kevin-allred.com. You can find all the stuff there too. You can do the pre-order from my website. And I hope you all will like it.
We'll have another party once the book drops, and me and Charnel read it and have another great intellectual discussion about that.
Yes. Also, and as well, Huey can edit this out. Huey and I are going to be in New York City next Saturday.
All right.
Seeing the read live. So if you are around, Huey, I'm not trying to speak for your time or what you planned on doing while you're in this.
I'm not leaving New York until the morning, the next morning.
So if you wanted to, before or after the show, Kevin, I feel like a link up is, you know,
in
the cards.
I'm here.
That would raise my spirits to amazing heights.
Get a whiskey. A whiskey.
I'm into it.
Cool.
I'm a sober now.
Doesn't matter. I'll drink. I ain't got nowhere to be.
Yeah, we'll do two for you. And
oh, thanks. I appreciate the damage to your liver.
It's already fatty.
I tried to be sober this month, but then I don't know. Donald Trump's still president, so I couldn't.
Gosh,
I don't even try anymore.
That's why we do this show to escape from that and just bask in Beyonce for a little while. and where can they find you at, Broski?
You can find me on, I can't talk anymore. You can find me on the timelines. That's Instagram. That's Twitter. It's at Charnel B. It's CharneilB. You can listen to me every other Monday on my true crime show, What Did You Do? Every Tuesday with my boy Frankie on What About Your Friends? What about you, Hugh?
You can hit me up on Twitter and Instagram at Baby Huey. That's BabyHuey. You can check me out on Boys Love Mariah. And you can check me out on Chapter 2 of the web series on Amazon Prime and Kennedy the web series on YouTube. And like I always say, just keep it locked on my social medias because I'm working on other things. And they will be coming soon.
I love it.
And thanks again, Kev, for taking the time out to talk to us. We appreciate your presence and your work and your time, and it's been great.
Thanks for having me.
It's always a blessing. Anytime. Always welcome here. You have a home here.
All right.
Yes. It's safe. It's a safe space. Nice. With that being said, remember, everybody, all roads lead to be.
So deuces and deuce.
Yeah.